Like how I slipped that little thing, everyone in favor. I, you know, amen. All right, I'm going to have fun this morning. Because this morning, I want to talk about the power of our thoughts in response to the spirit of this age that we live in. Now, when I talk about the power of our thoughts, I'm not talking about the power to create your own reality like some wackos say. There's people who are really pretty delusional and think that their own thinking can create their own reality, and that's just a bunch of gobbledygook. That's a Latin word, gobbledygookus. But what I am talking about is that, because we all know, only God has the ability to create something out of nothing, right? But we're not that way. Nevertheless, our thoughts are very powerful. And what we do with our thoughts is really important. So this morning, I want to talk about thinking about what we're thinking about. Because what you're thinking about will soon become where you're walking about. Let that set in. People who shift cultures know that in order to change a culture, it requires a change in the way the culture thinks. So, universities know this very well, right? That's why they come up with a thought. And they then, to that thought, they say, okay, we're going to create an internal set, an internal mindset of priorities and values. And those internal values will lead to an external set of priorities that will guide that individual. For example, we take the idea of democracy, right? Now, with the idea of democracy comes internal values, a mindset of freedoms. We have certain freedoms and certain rights that we hold and we value. True? Then, from those internal values of freedom and individual rights, we come up with a constitution. And in that constitution, we have a whole set of Bill of Rights, and those guide our behaviors as Americans. This process enables a person then to identify where they're going in life and where they end up. Because people will pursue these internal mindsets and they'll remove any barrier that opposes their external priorities. That's why we have stood up around the world, quite honestly, when the call to us has come from World War I, World War II, all the other things, because we want to defend freedom and human rights and our internal priorities. We have a constitution, and so we want to defend that. Culture is changed by whatever is cultivated in its soul. What is inside is going to flow out. So what is being cultivated in our culture's soul right now? Interesting to think about, isn't it? What do you think? And I'm not asking for an external response just now. But what do you think is really being cultivated in the soul of our culture? Interesting to think about, isn't it? This whole idea of an idea, internal mindsets leads to external priorities, happens with us as individuals too. People are changed when they are exposed to new thoughts. So what are you thinking about? And what are you purposefully cultivating in your own soul right now? Because we will end up where our mind dwells. We have thoughts, and our thoughts lead to our words. Our words will lead to our actions. Our actions will develop into habits. Our habits will develop a character, and our character will lead us into our destiny. As it says in Proverbs 23, as a man thinks, so he is. I love what Paul says for us and why he says us to consider very carefully what we're thinking about. In the book of Philippians, chapter 4, it says this, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, and whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, and whatever is of good repute, if there's any excellence in anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. And I think the reason Paul wrote that to the church in Philippi is because he understood the power of our thoughts. What we think about will become what we speak about, and what we speak about will lead us into our actions, our habits, our character, and our destiny. So we need to be very intentional about thinking about what we're thinking about. I like what Romans chapter 12 says, and therefore, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of the mind, right? So now that we have this introduction, if you will, this idea of how important it is of what we're thinking about, now we can take a look at what's going on in our culture today. And I want to talk specifically about the hateful speech and violence that is all around us. I mean, you'd have to be in a hobbit hole to not be aware of what's been going on in our culture, not only the last few weeks, but for quite a long time. I want to make sure from the very beginning that I denounce in no uncertain terms all forms of racism and hateful speech and violence. There is no room in the kingdom of God for treating anyone less than how we would treat ourselves. I cannot wait to be in the kingdom. Finally, on the other side of glory, as they say, where we are going to see the marvelous creation that God has created the way it was intended to be. No racism, no hatred, no injustice, no poverty. Isn't it going to be marvelous? I mean, one of the things I absolutely loved in my early, I almost said my former life, me and Shirley MacLaine, earlier when I was younger, was I got to travel the world and experience cultures all over the place, in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, in Central America, in the South Pacific. It was marvelous, and I loved, the thing about that I love about different cultures is just listening to how they live life and experiencing how they live life. Well, I remember being, take a minute. I remember being sitting on dirt floors in a mud hut in Kenya, working with the Maasai. And they have these mud huts that are made out of mud and cow dung, and they pack it together, and they're such beautiful people, so simple. There's just dirt. I remember the water that, you know, there's very little water in this area in Kenya, and it was almost like red from the dirt. The water was already red. So if you go to take some kind of like a little sponge bath, you know, your skin becomes red with the color of the water. But I loved living with these people. It was amazing. And I loved and appreciated how they live life. Now, make no mistake, I am so glad to be an American. I am so glad to be in this land of plenty, in this, holy smokes, we live in the Bay Area. What a privilege that we have. And yet, I've learned that there are so many other ways to live life. so many other ideas out there. And I just love learning from the different cultures and people about their experience in their life. So anyhow, while we wait for the kingdom of God to come, we do have a responsibility here and now as followers of Jesus, right? To help usher in God's kingdom to the best of our ability now. Doesn't the Lord teach us in the Lord's Prayer, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done"? And so we are called on as believers to bring about the justice of God here on earth while we wait for his kingdom to come in its purity as it is in heaven. And the true kingdom justice, although it will only be found in heaven, is something you and I need to live for while on this earth. And in this battle of standing against racism, we must be careful of drinking the very poison that has contaminated the hearts and minds of those that we are so in opposition to, that we would say, "Oh, that is such vile hatred that you're spewing." It is. But let's not drink the same poison of hatred. I find it a fascinating quote. It goes, I've seen it on a bumper sticker. My wife reads materials for her doctorate, going through all these books. Right now she's reading about the desert mothers. It's like, oh my gosh, desert mothers from Egypt and Ethiopia and all these places. Like, oh my gosh, what? I read bumper stickers. I don't know about you, but I read them. And this one bumper sticker says, "If you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention." Yeah, if you're not outraged, no, wait a minute. So is outrage the only response? Well, wait, unless I am outraged, I'm not paying attention. Well, what if I'm not paying attention? Isn't there some other response than being outraged? It's almost leaves you to say, "Okay, I'm outraged. What are you outraged about?" I don't know, but I'm outraged. We can pay attention and not be limited to that one response. I submit to you that our motive must always be one of love. Anything else will fall short and consume us with the very anger, hatred, and bitterness and judgment that we seek to fight against. Jesus said, "For all those who take up the sword shall perish by the sword." That's in Matthew 26. We get our idiom, "violence begets violence," from that. I suppose we could say hatred begets hatred. Shouting begets shouting, right? You ever been with a person and they're just shouting? You know, it's kind of hard just to be there and speak in a soft voice. I mean, they're shouting, so you don't want to shout right back, right? And Jesus saying, that's not going to cut it. Listen to what James says. In chapter 3 of the book of James, he says this: "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic." Whoa. Did you catch that? The wisdom that is not from above is, if you have bitter jealousy, selfish ambition in your heart, it's earthly, natural, demonic. Whoa. That's pretty strong words. He goes on to say, "For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there's disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, than peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of grace and good fruits, unwavering and without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown not in anger, not in hatred, not in violent protest, is sown in peace by those who make peace. I remember back in the 1970s, early 70s, when I was in junior high and high school, I'm the byproduct of the marvelous Los Angeles Unified School District. And I chuckle because, anyhow, never mind. It's a self-depreciating humor. Someone else is from LA. Yeah, you're like, okay, we get it. But I didn't think there was really any racism in my heart. But in the early 70s, they started the busing program to integrate the schools. So there were schools where you had all this people of the same ethnicity, where like, tell it like it is, all the white people kind of attended these schools, and all the African Americans, they attended these schools, all the Hispanics, they attended these schools. We were very much divided racially as a nation. And this is the early 70s. So L.A. came up with the idea, let's bus, and not just L.A., but many places across our nation. And they began to bus kids back and forth across the school districts. And I remember when that happened, all of a sudden I realized, oh, yeah, there is some racism in my heart after all. But I loved the busing program because what it did for me, it was helped me in a time when my mind was still very pliable to become less racist in my mind. Know what I said? Less racist, okay? I remember a time when, do I share that story? No, that one's probably not a good one to share. let me give you an example as a kid, right? And what the busing program did in my life and how it helped me to appreciate and break down some barriers so that now my friends no longer were my friends according to the color of their skin, if you will, quoting from Martin Luther King, but according to the content of their character. And so I made friends across, and people made friends with me, you know, that were not of the same skin color as I am. And then I thought I was doing pretty good, again, because of my international travels. I really did not see things through eyes that had racism. Until my daughter, who went off to college, started talking to me about white supremacy and white privilege. I said, well, what are you talking about? You know, and I would tell her about, what do you mean white privilege? And I told her how when we grew up in, we were pretty poor, and our shoes would get holes in the bottom of them. And I'm the youngest of six, so my dad had a very large family. He said I never really wanted any kids. Couldn't quite figure out why he had six, but so glad they had six. I'm the youngest. Woohoo! You had me, Dad. Yay! They never thought of why they stopped after me, though. Anyhow. But I remember we'd cut out the cardboard of the cereal boxes and slip them in our shoes so that we would, you know, get a little more wear out of our shoes. So I started going on and on. And then I thought about that for a while. And one of my colleagues from, as you know, I also work in the political arena. And I've worked for an assemblywoman who was a Democrat, and I worked in her office. I now work for an assemblywoman who is a Republican, and I work in her office. And they're all very confused because I have friends on both sides of the aisle. And I love what I get to see as an insider is the friendships that are, there's plenty of animosity to go around, but there's a lot of friendship across the aisles, behind the scenes. And And I come from this background of learning to make friends with people from different experiences and different walks of life. And in that one of those offices, one of my colleagues was talking about, this is when the Black Lives Matter movement started. And he said, you just don't understand. He's an African-American. He's a retired police officer. We were the two old guys in the office. All the other ones were young kids, interns, and all that kind of stuff. So we got along great. And he said, yeah, but you don't understand the whole thing of white privilege. And I go, his name was Ron as well. And I said, well, Ron, what do you, you know, can you help me understand? What are you talking about? He goes, your kids ever get pulled over just for being the color? And I go, well, no. See, I don't have an experience here, right? He goes, yeah, I tell my kids, when you get pulled over, not if, but when you get pulled over, you keep your hands, because he's a cop, right? Said, you keep your hands on that steering wheel, and you answer politely to the officer regardless of whatever they say. Your life is too precious to make a political or a statement right in that moment. And all of a sudden, I begin to realize, oh, my gosh. There are people that get pulled over just because of the color of their skin? Yeah, Ron, all the time. Whoa, I'm so sorry, Ron. I had no idea. And so that's why I say I'm less racist today. I don't know if any of us will ever be able to truly be without racism, although I would hope it would be true. But that is a goal of mine. I want to be less racist today than I am from yesterday. I want to be changed by the life of Jesus, who came to change us all. And one of the things I appreciate about Ron is how he became friends with me. And that's what I appreciate, if I could just be so blunt, about Gerald and Jamie. They're friends of mine. Wow. These guys call me a friend. And I learn about life through their eyes. You see, before I used to say, I'm their friend. Now I realize, no. They're my friend. They call me friend. And it's just that realization of somebody who's walked a different path is willing to call me a friend. And what that does is that opens me up to understand their life from their perspective. You see, I don't think violence solves anything. I think you could have the most fantastic argument, the most logical argument in the world, and it won't make a bit of difference. This is what Martin Luther King said, and I quote, oops, I grabbed my Bible, my notes are in my Bible. I don't want you to think I was reading from the Bible. Although I highly respect Martin Luther King Jr. and what he did and the civil rights movement that he started in our nation. He says this, the ultimate weakness of violence is that it is a descending spiral beginning the very thing it seeks to destroy. Instead of diminishing evil, it multiplies it. Through violence, you may murder the liar, but you cannot murder the lie, nor establish the truth. Through violence, you may murder the hater, but you do not murder hate. In fact, violence merely increases. Returning violence for violence multiplies violence, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Again, that's Martin Luther King Jr. in the chapter Loving Your Enemies in his book, Strength to Love. You see, I think he understood what James taught and what Jesus introduced to this world, that until the hearts of people are changed, unless the way they think is changed, their actions won't stop. That's why the protests and the rallies and all of that, we have a First Amendment. where we give people a right to say what they want to say, right? And it could be the most vile, hateful thing. And we can be in absolute opposition to it. But again, responding with the same poison of hatred is not going to change their point of view, right? I noticed in my own heart with some of these things that have gone on over the last several weeks that I was filled with anger and hatred about it. And I just so wanted the message to change. But I realized, the Lord challenged me. He goes, you know, it's good that you want the message to change, but where's your heart? And I had to be honest with the Lord and said, I don't really give a hill of beans about the people. I just want the message to change. Yeah, that's the problem, son. Ooh. Wow. You ever have the Lord really kind of speak to you and you just know, whoo boy, that was God. That was not my own thought because I would have given myself an out. That was the Lord really challenging me. Because thoughts lead to our words. Our words lead to our actions. Our actions develop habits. Our habits shape our character. And our character leads us into the destiny where our thoughts first began. That is why we must change the heart. And that's why only love can drive out hatred. Only light can drive out the darkness. So what's really going on in my heart? What's really going on in your heart as you hear all of the commotion that's going on in our world today? And what are you thinking about? What's being cultivated inside? Are you intentionally cultivating something in your own soul? And how does one change a heart anyhow? By befriending those with whom we disagree. Wow. Really, Ron? Yeah. Take a look at Jesus. Doesn't it say in Matthew chapter 9, verse 10, it says, "Then it happened that as Jesus was reclining at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were dining with Jesus and his disciples." Many. Now, this isn't the Gospel of Mark. I mean, Mark was all over the place, right? Immediately. And then suddenly, straight away, he uses hyperbole to kind of keep the story moving along. And then everyone. But when Matthew uses it, we know he's talking about many. So this wasn't one or two. This wasn't an exception. This was so much so the lifestyle of Jesus that one of the things they accused him of was being a friend of tax gatherers, harlots, and sinners. Whoa. What kind of friends do you hang around? I'm sorry, was that too personal? Or it was just maybe you're thinking about something else. I gotta ask myself, what kind of friends do I have? You ever, in social media, they have these things that it's called an echo chamber. Those of you, all you kids, y'all know this anyhow, so bear with me as I explain to us older folks. An echo chamber is when your entire circle of influence thinks exactly like you. And so all you're doing is hearing repeated back to you what you want to hear. The same thing is happening in our culture. It's called, you've heard the word, what tribe are you from? Now, believe me, I love Ancestry.com and all those other things where you find out your ancestry and your family roots and everything else. It's fascinating, wonderful things. And we all have a heritage that we should be glad from that was passed on down to us, and you change the parts that you don't like about it, all right? But what's happened in America, I think, is that we have become, we're getting this tribalism effect, this echo chamber effect, where unless people agree with you, you have nothing to do with them. In fact, so much so that you're willing to break off relationship with anyone that does not agree with you. You are dead to me. That was kind of like the soup Nazi guy, never mind. No friendship for you. So, I mean, these things, it's like, one of the things that's there is like, oh, I can't remember how it goes, so never mind. I'll forget about it. Forget about it. So, in this echo chamber effect, we really don't make friends with people who think differently than us. And is that helpful or is that harmful? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we should seek out friendship with the world, because Jesus is very clear about that, right? Don't seek out friendship with the world, meaning that you take the world on. We have the words that Jesus has given to us in the Bible to guide us in our lives and shaping our values. But how many people do you know that don't agree with you? And are you friends with them? Or are you wanting just to be a friend with them so that you can convince them of how superior your way of life is? I'm stepping on a lot of toes, including my own this morning. I believe when Jesus said in Luke chapter 6, love your enemies, that he meant it. And that's a challenge to me. Just like a challenge when I heard about what was happening in Charlottesville, I thought, you know, my first response was not for the people. It was the message. I wanted to stop the message. That's good. We should want to stop that kind of message of racism and hatred. But is there a better way to go about it? Is there a more effective way to go about it? Because of the spirit of division that is over our land. I want to show you a video clip. It's a short 3-minute video clip of a man by the name of Daryl Davis. And although he espouses the same kindness to all people that Jamie Davis shows to people, they are not related, okay? But it's Daryl Davis. And I'll mention his name in the notes for you so that you could look it up on your own. But this man has a fascinating approach to dealing with this very subject of racism. Take a look.
My name is Daryl Davis. I'm a musician. Make my living playing music, performing rock and roll, blues, country, western, R&B. I play whatever kind of music I'm paid to play. In 1983, I was playing in a country western bar, and this white gentleman came up from behind and put his arm around my shoulder, and he says, hey, you know, I really like your all's music. And he announces that this was the first time he'd ever sat down with a black man. I said, why? Tell me. He looked back up at me just as plain as day, didn't crack a smile. He said, I'm a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Hands me his Klan card. Oh, this thing is for real. Some years later, I decided, you know, I need to write a book. And I want to go around the country and interview Klan leaders and Klan members and get their perspectives. I'll start right here in Maryland. Start with the head of the Maryland Klan, Roger Kelly. He agreed to interview with me. At the end, I said, I don't like what he stands for, but I like him as a person. And he would invite me to some Klan rallies. And I would go to these Klan rallies. I'd watch the fire on the cross and all that kind of thing. This went on for a couple years. We would even have dinner together. So here is the leader of the Klan with his archenemy, a black man, sitting down at the same table. Over time, Mr. Kelly and I became the best of friends. And he quit the Klan. When he quit the Klan, I got his Robin Hood. And the Klan in Maryland fell apart. So now that does not mean that there are no more racists in the state of Maryland. There's just no more organized racist organization. I never set out to convert anybody. even today. But when the first Klansman quit because of me, I thought, oh, you know, I'm onto something. Over time, you know, becoming a friend of mine, they began rethinking their own ideology themselves. And they come to the decision, hey, you know what? There's more to this world than being in the Klan. I need to get out. And when they do, it's usually I'm responsible for it. And some of them give me their robes and hoods and give me different things.
Isn't that powerful? Wow. Yeah. What a lesson we can learn from this man, Daryl Davis, that has befriended leaders, not just people within the KKK, but leaders. Like, whoa. I'm blown away. I'm absolutely blown away. I think the words of Jesus through John are so true. 1 John chapter 4 says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God." I'm thinking, wow, what a challenge that we have before us. Because a response is required of us. How will we think differently? Where has the Spirit of God been speaking to you as I have shared? Now, I've read to you from the Word of God, and that is truth. I've shared with you my opinions that I think are true, but I submit those to you as the way that I think Jesus is challenging you and me towards, and that's becoming friends with the people that we disagree with, intentionally becoming a friend. Now, I love what he said, right? I never set out to win an argument. He just wanted to become their friends and explore their way of life. He wasn't going to change. I mean, can you imagine Daryl going to a rally? I can't imagine. I can't imagine myself going to a rally. But for a black man to go to a rally, how scary that had to be for him. And yet love was greater. Love compelled him to get to know these guys and to become friends with them. And I love the impact of his friendship, that it caused people to see, oh, there's so much more than this small-mindedness that I have had in life. There's so much more. You see, you and I are called to, we are not called to change anyone's behavior. That's the Spirit of God. Doesn't it say the Lord is the truth, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, right? And who's the truth? Jesus, right? So Jesus is the one that's going to set people free. I'm not going to set them free. You're not going to set them free. That's not what we're called to do. We're not called to convince anyone. We are called to share our story. We are called to share our opinions and our beliefs and the things that we hold as true values. But when we do that in a spirit of love, I believe it takes the wind out of their sail, and they are left with having to consider a different way of thinking.